Okay, let's begin. Can everyone hear me? Great. Okay. Great. So we have a really jam-packed share tonight because we're dealing with a topic which is fairly sensitive in the sense that it's a very common issue that many people deal with in Manhattan all the time, every single Shabbos. And as such, it's a topic which I tread a little sensitively because I know that the goal of this year is not for me to give you my psak, my personal opinion. If you want, you can ask me after this year. It's really to discover the issues, give general guidelines, explore the issue as a whole. So I'm treading a little bit lightly, but nonetheless, I think it's a really interesting and important topic to explore because it really does come up all the time. And the topic we're discussing tonight is a continuation of last week's topic. And for those who missed last week, it's okay. We're going to repeat kind of the highlights of that year because today's cheer is actually the more practical one. Because we've been discussing the issue of riding an elevator on Shabbos. And so last week, what we covered was we kind of began with the basics. The real questions beginning with an elevator in general. Is there an issue of riding an elevator even if no buttons are pressed, right? Think of a common automatically programmed elevator. It goes automatically from floor to floor. Are there any issues with going on such an elevator? And so we dealt with that issue kind of in a vacuum, an issue which doesn't really relate to most of our situations in America. For the most part, you don't really ever find Shabbos elevators in America. It's just not so common. Except maybe like Lincoln Square's building or a few shuls have it in their building. But for the most part, automatic elevators is not really what we deal with. For the most part, we actually deal with an issue of an elevator, which is run in the building. We live in apartments that are yeah, some hospitals do have Shabbos elevators. I don't know if every single one of them does, even in the New York area, but a lot of them do. But so thank you for that. Especially if you don't go, I'm not talking about the shul or hospital setting. Most of us live in apartments, and especially on the west side, but really throughout Manhattan and plenty of cities, where you really can only live on, tall apartments. You can always, say, ideally, maybe you should find an apartment. We'll talk about this, finding an apartment on a lower floor. But it's at the end of the day, it's not very practical unless we're, people aren't going to live on the west side. They're going to live in the suburbs only. There really is no situation in which all the Orthodox Jews are going to live on lower floors. It's just not reasonable to ask. And so this issue is going to come up all the time, over and over again. What do you do in such a situation? What are kind of the solutions to the problems? Is it better to use a doorman, not to use a doorman, to ask someone else to open the door for you? What are the solutions? What are the common things people tend to do? That's kind of what I want to discuss tonight. Kind of go through the guidelines, and I guess we'll see where we stand by the end. So that's kind of what I want to do. I hope there's a lot to cover, a lot of different issues at play here. So let's get moving. If anybody has any comments or questions, as always, feel free to interrupt in the middle, ask on the chat, whatever you like. Comments, questions are always very welcome. So to begin this issue, it's worth repeating kind of the highlights of last week, because last week is really going to be the basis upon which all of today's discussion is. Last week, we discussed issues of an elevator as a whole, as I mentioned, the issue of an elevator, especially an automatic elevator. What are the potential issues? So we mentioned first, and this is kind of the first thing to say, is that all the elevator situations, there's always going to be a problem of holding the door open because of the sensors, the way that sensors work. If we keep the door open, there's always going to be an issue. And so we're throughout all of these questions, we're always assuming that a Jew is not actively involved in keeping the door open. You're not, holding the door open. You're making sure you're getting in the elevator with plenty of time before the doors start closing, right? None of those issues are, we're not dealing with that issue at all. Of course, it does come up sometimes that, an elevator will close very quickly. So there's things you can do about that, but we're really trying to avoid any of those issues because that might be the biggest problem of keeping the elevator door open. It might really be potentially malacha deraita, depending on how you paskin. So that might be that might be an issue. But avoiding those issues, for the most part, most elevators, as long as you get in or right when a door opens or soon afterwards, you probably can get in, you have plenty of time. So what else are the potential issues? So if you're not pressing any buttons, right, it's an automatic elevator. Nonetheless, the issues are going to come up that we saw last week. It's potentially, according to some people, there's an issue that your weight is contributing to a need for the elevator to do more work, right? You have a certain weight, a certain heft, a certain mass. And that mass means that the elevator is going to need more current, right, in order to move the motor and bring you up. And so potentially there might be an issue that your weight contributes to an increase of current. So is there malacha of increase of current? We saw there was a debate. For the most part, most poskim think that increase of current is not an issue. But there are some, and there are some, you know, big names who do think there would be a potential issue. And so that might be one reason people are a little reticent to get into automatic elevators. The second potential issue is specifically going down. What we talked about, despite the fact it's slightly counterintuitive, the truth is that going down an elevator is actually significantly worse than going up. Because going down, in some ways, your weight is contributing to the movement of the elevator. So your weight, your body mass, is actually contributing to the malacha being performed, in which case it might be much more problematic. And we saw that there's a lot of debate about it, and you have a lot of, you know, big hitters on both sides, and big hitters who are matir, Shlomo Zalman, Orbach, who was matir, but Rav Halpern's view, the person who believed that there was a problem going down, he has a very significant view that people, you can't really disregard so easily, and it's for that reason that many suggest if you can walk down the stairs, it is better than taking the elevator. Those are kind of the general issues. I'm not going to be like a psak issue here, even what to do, but those are kind of the general issues when it comes to an automatic elevator, the issue of increase of current, and the issue, especially going down, of the contribution of your weight. There is a third kind of a side issue, which I didn't bring up last week, and it's not really necessary to bring up, but that some elevators, especially in taller buildings, tend to have some type of weighing mechanism. In fact, almost all elevators have a form of a weighing mechanism to ensure that they're not overloaded, right? Because an elevator can't have too much weight. So there's always like an overload system. But even beyond that, especially more efficient elevators in taller buildings, I'm thinking like really tall buildings, most of those elevators tend to have an actual weighing system so it can best program how much electricity is needed to pick up, you know, the weight in the elevator. For various reasons, and it's beyond our topic, beyond our scope, it's probably not an issue for various reasons. You want after this year, we can talk about why that wouldn't be an issue. But for various reasons, you don't have to worry so much about the weighing mechanism. Post-game, for the most part, do not bring it up even as a potential issue. So you don't have to worry about the weighing mechanism. Great. So all of that is with regard to an automatic elevator. We saw there are potential issues, and we saw for the most part, people are tend to be makil, tend to be permit tend to permit it. Right, there tends to really not be an issue of going on an automatic elevator. An elevator is set up, especially with like in Israel, where it's like set up with like a certain mashgiach who checks to make sure it works, solves all the issues. That's when it comes to automatic elevators. At the end of the day, though, for our purposes, the real issue that we're going to be dealing with is not an automatic elevator, because they're not so common, I guess, hospitals and shuls setting aside. For the most part, as I mentioned, we're really talking about situations in Manhattan, in the Upper West Side, or wherever you live, where we're dealing with an issue of how do I get upstairs or downstairs, and there's no automatic elevator. Can I use the other residents in the building, Jewish or non-Jewish, to somehow aid and help me in this process? And so in effect, there are two common scenarios, and they're kind of, you know, offshoots of those scenarios, or, you know, variations of them. But there are two common scenarios, and we'll talk about the variations as well, that come up. The first variation, the first scenario, is one in which you ride along with someone else, right? You see someone, you know, your neighbor lives on, you know, whatever floor they're living on, or even if you better yet, you don't actually know where they live, but you know, you have a sense they're living probably on like 415. And you live somewhere in the vicinity. And so what do? You see your non-Jewish neighbor, call him Muhammad, just to make it clear he's Jewish. He's not Jewish. So you call a non-Jewish neighbor named Muhammad, walking in, very nice guy, walking into the elevator. And you walk right after him, walk right into the elevator with him. He goes up to his floor, 415. And if it's your floor, great, you get out that floor. Get out that floor. If it's not your floor, you get out with him and you walk, you know, the stairs, a few stairs up, a few stairs down, somewhere nearby, and it does most of the work. You're just riding along with Muhammad in this elevator. That's scenario one. I'm sure you guys know what I'm talking about. Scenario two is a scenario in which you, in fact, do not have someone you're riding along with, but instead you have asked or you have hinted, or, you know, it's just acknowledged this is the system that's built, that someone else, usually a doorman, that's typically the way it works, will press the button on your behalf. Right? You'll enter a building, they see you're wearing a kippah, they know who you are, they know the residents of the building, ask the doorman to open the door for them. So the doorman knows who you are, they see all the Shabbos. So the doorman goes to the elevator, presses the button, calls the elevator, asks, oh, what floor do you need to get off on? You say, like, oh, 415, whatever it is. And the doorman presses 415, you get in the elevator, and By that way, you're able to get in the elevator and go up to floor 15. That's kind of scenario two. And so I want to talk about both of those cases. There are obviously variations, talk about the variations. And I want to talk about what to do with those situations, like how does halakha view those situations? You know, are they mutar? And in what scenarios would they be permissible or usable? The main issue at hand, and I'll share some sources in a minute. The main issue at hand in these scenarios, we're talking about riding along with someone else, is that we're primarily concerned with an issue of what's called amir la'akum. There is a prohibition, rabbinic prohibition, for you to ask a non-Jew to do work for you on your behalf on Shabbos. And it's not only a prohibition for you to ask a non-Jew, it's a prohibition for you to benefit from the work a non-Jew does for you on Shabbos, even if you didn't ask the non-Jew to do it for you, right? Even if I don't really know this non-Jew, I have nothing to do with this non-Jew, they're just being a friendly person, and they're doing something on my behalf, right? They do some halacha, they turn on the lights for me, it is going to be problematic. There are going to be exceptions where it's permitted to do so, despite the fact that it is prohibited rabbinically, but it is, as like a first basis worth mentioning, it is prohibited to benefit and to ask a non-Jew to do work for you on Shabbos. That's just the blanket rule. So the question is, in our scenario, is there some type of exception or is there a way to avoid that issue? And so I'd like to, for that purpose, share my screen and show you, share some sources with you. Any questions or comments so far? I don't see anyone. Okay, great. In terms of the ride-along, so let's deal first with the first problem, which is the problem of the ride-along, right? You're riding along with a non-Jew. You see your neighbor Muhammad go into the elevator, and you want to just follow them along to their floor. And so the halacha is as follows. The Shulchan Aruch paskins in the Sif Shimon Chavhei, Sif Yud Aleph, this is source number one, that in the case here is, you know, obviously relative to the case that the Shulchan Aruch was talking about in his 1600s, but it's certainly, you can abstract the concept and generalize it to our scenario as well. Because the rule is as follows. Likate Eino Yehudi Asavim L'Sorach Behemto Im Eino Makiro Machil Acharav Yisrael. There is a rule that if a non-Jew does work for himself or herself, right, only for their own benefit, and you are able to benefit from that same work without any more work being done on your behalf, then it is permitted to benefit from that work. In other words, to give you a classical example, he keeps going, Behold davar d'ika l'mecha shema yirbi shvilo, yes be choshesh, avah. But davar d'leka l'mecha shema yirbi shvilo. If you're not concerned that the non-Jew is going to add more work on your behalf, they're not going to do more work. They're doing the exact same action regardless of whether you're present or not. Kigon, example. Shehid lik ner le'atzmo. For instance, let's say the non-Jew walks into a room and he or she turns on the light. Oh, a second case. Asa keves liaribo. They build some type of ramp for themselves. In those scenarios, shebener echad ubekeves echad yespeak the kol. In a situation in which the presence of this action will not be affected or changed by the presence of this non-Jew. You're able to benefit from the same action regardless of whether you were there or not. It wouldn't have changed the actual action. Then it is mutar. It is permitted to benefit from the Gentile's work. And so, in an elevator, in a situation in which an non-Jew is naturally going to floor 15, no matter what, whether you were there or not, Muhammad, your neighbor, is going to floor 15. So now, if you step into this elevator after him, the elevator is going to do the same amount of work regardless. The elevator is still going to go up, and therefore, it'd be permitted for you to follow along with Muhammad into the elevator. Right? There'd be no prohibition of you going into the elevator after Muhammad. And that's indeed what the Shmir Shalos Gehata quotes. If you look at source number two, he says, "Ma'alit regilah she'ein ovedet al pikud Shabbat." A regular elevator, which works, it's not automated for Shabbos. Shizmin anachri la'atmo v'hu gam locheit ala kaftor ha'movil ha'malit lekomar tzuvia lo. Mutar le'yudi likanes le'malit im anachri le'tzaref le'nisya lekomar she'anachri megia b'bli she'ayudi noten anachri kol hora. It is permitted for you to go in this elevator, ride along with a non-Jew as the non-Jew is going up this elevator. There's no prohibition for you to go because, in effect, the elevator is doing no extra work for you. The same exact action would have happened for the non-Jew himself without your presence, and therefore it would be permitted. That's the general rule. And therefore, ride-along in theory would be permitted. However, there is a very important exception to this rule. First, it's worth mentioning that this is only with regard to the non-Jew problem. Of course, if you believe in the automatic elevator had its own issues, then those issues would still apply here as well. Right? We're here talking about the work of Amir al-Akum of benefiting the work from a non-Jew. There'd be no issue of a ride-along. But there would be still be the issues of the elevator in general, an automatic elevator, and all of those issues of last year would still be relevant and present even in the ride-along case. There is a second worthwhile criteria that's worth mentioning, which is that all of this is true only in a situation in which the non-Jew is not doing work for you, right? The non-Jew is only stepping in the elevator, and regardless of whether you were there or not, right, they were going to press 415. But if the non-Jew planned on doing something extra for you, right, there's something that actually changed because of you, right? You're stepping in the elevator for Muhammad, and your stop, he Muhammad lives on floor 15, and he knows that you live on floor 17. And so he pressed for you floor 17. So it would be prohibited for you to go to floor 17. Because even though, it was, you didn't even tell Muhammad, you didn't ask Muhammad to do this for you, nonetheless, doing work for a non-Jew, for a non-Jew does for a Jew is always going to be prohibited in these type of scenarios. And you can see in Mishnah Shulchan Aruch, it's source number one, since your bet says as follows, Afal pish eino mikiro, even if the non-Jew doesn't know you, or even especially if he does know you, so im omer beferosh, if the non-Jew says explicitly that they're doing this action on your behalf, im eino omer kein, even if the non-Jew doesn't state it, if it's clear from the very actions, the very situation that you're doing it on behalf of the Jew, if, for instance, a situation that Shinar quotes, if a non-Jew turns on his light for you and then leaves the room, right? Clearly, the purpose of the light in the room is only for your benefit. In that case, it is asur, it is forbidden to benefit from that malacha. And so, in terms of the issue of Amir la'akum, you would be prohibited to, even though you would be allowed to ride along with a non-Jew, it would be prohibited to. For the non-Jew to do work for you, to press the button for you, right? Any situation in which the non-Jew acknowledges that your presence, more than just, like being friendly, and actually does some type of button work or keeps the door open for you, all of those in theory would be problematic. And so that's an important caveat on this idea of the ride-along. Okay, any questions so far? Yeah, so I would say, I think it's actually a very common issue asked about, non-Jew does something for you and it's like you didn't ask for it. So generally the rule is you're not allowed to benefit from it, right? How far do you have to run away? Like, let's say, I have a, non-Jewish neighbor comes in and they turn on the lights. And they turn the lights out of favor for me. It wasn't for their purpose. It was only for me. It was a favor for me. Like, do I have to run out of the room? Can I, like, have to avoid the room on Shabbos? So in theory, the answer is you don't really have to go so far to avoid it. You don't have to totally, run the room. But the Mishnah Berurah, for instance, in that type of context, mentioned that like if you have like a non-Jewish worker for you, you have to make it very clear that they should not turn on the lights for you on Shabbos. There might be exceptions when you would be allowed to do so, but in general, avoiding those exceptional cases, you have to really tell them not to do something for you. And if they do it regularly, then Mishnah Berurah actually has this very strong line where he says you actually have to fire them because they're not listening to your instructions. And so that's like in terms of a general issue of like avoiding benefit from them, except for in permissible cases, we'll talk about in a minute, the permissible exceptions. And so in this case of the elevator, one second, Michael. So in this case of the elevator, I would say that, once you're riding along, say the case of Muhammad, I mentioned earlier, Muhammad lives on floor 15, and he also pressed the button floor 17. I would say just get in the elevator to floor 15, get out with him, and just walk up the stairs to 17. right? Don't use the benefit of that extra work, but in terms of riding along, that would be fine. That's kind of my impression. Yeah, Micah. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yes, that there is exactly that type of issue, and we'll talk about that in a second, which is that obviously if you start doing this regularly, the person's going to like, oh, I'm doing you a favor and put 417. You have to be very clear and explicit that you don't want him to do a favor for you. You want to get out with him on 415, because otherwise he's going to start doing melacha on your behalf. And this really brings us I actually want to make one caveat before I say this. There is another case, we're gonna table it for now. There is all this with the ride along is all assuming that the person you're riding along with is not Jewish. What if the person you're riding along with is Jewish? And if you live on the Upper West Side, there is a very high chance that you are riding along with a Jew. Might not be affiliated, might not be religious, but there's probably a pretty good chance that they're Jewish. I mean, not everyone's Jewish. You can find out, you know, a decent amount. But in theory, there are a lot of Jews. And so everything I mentioned so far would not apply. It's actually very complicated. I'll talk about it maybe a little bit later. But all this assuming that we're riding along with a non-Jew. I'll get back to the Jews a little bit later. Okay, that's kind of scenario one. Scenario two is what about asking someone to do it for you? Is there any scenario, right? There is a general prohibition. I cannot ask someone to do melacha for me. And I also cannot benefit from someone doing melacha for me. And so all the doorman situations, every scenario in which a doorman does melacha for me, even if I don't actually ever ask them, right? They just know me. They see a Jewish person entering the building, or they know me who lives in the building, and they press the button for me. All of that, in theory, is going to be problematic, even if I do not ask them. And so the question is, are there any exceptions, right? There's this general prohibition, Amir Lakum, of asking or benefiting from non-Jews' work for you on Shabbos. Are there any exceptions? Indeed, there is a potential exception, and so it's worth going through kind of the sugya because it's a little bit. There are a few different opinions, and it's worth just exploring the different opinions. And the sugya begins as follows. The Gemara in Erevin states the following case: How Yenuka source number three? How Yenuka ishtapi chamime? There was a child who was accustomed back in the day. When it came to a brit milah, a circumcision on Shabbos, the custom was they would prepare hot water to bathe the child before and after the bris. That was kind of their form of hygiene. Obviously, nowadays we have our own means of hygiene. We have, you know, our science is a little bit improved, but back then they used to make hot water for for the circumcised baby. So the Gemara says the following: What happens if a scenario occurs and the water was spilt? Right, and now you want to do the bris on Shabbat, or the bris maybe already happened. You want to still like help the child, and you know, as part of the hygienic, you know, needs of, you know, of keeping the child healthy. So what do you do about bringing this water? So Amar Lehu, Rabba stated, Naiti lechamime bigo beite. So Rabba said, bring water from my house. Right, I have some hot water. I left a kettle on Shabbos. Bring water from my house. So Amar Leabaye b'halo arvina. So Abaye said, oh, but there's a problem. Because there's no eru, there's no way to carry the water, you know, from your house to the house where the bris is, because there's no eru. So the Gemara says as follows: Amarle nimrle lenachri leitile. So what was the solution? Ask a non-Jew to bring along the water for you. And so the conclusion of this Gemara seems to be the psak is that you are allowed to ask a non-Jew to bring water for you. For the sake of a milah, for the sake of a mitzvah in this case, you are allowed to ask a non-Jew to bring water for you, even though the courtyard is not, even though he's carrying and there's no air. That's the general case. The question that becomes the issue at hand is how do you generalize this to all other malachot? What principles can we deduce from this Gemara? And there's a three-way machloket, there are three positions in this discussion. And I'm going to say it outside, and we'll read the Shulchan Aruch, and I'll show you that these are the three positions. The first position by a group of Rishonim is that this discussion only applies to the mitzvah of Brit Milah. It only has relevance to the issue of circumcision. You cannot deduce any principles from here that permit a Amir L'Akum benefiting from a non-Jew's work on Shabbos without any other mitzvah other than circumcision. So it's really just not relevant to our purposes. Unless, I guess, there's a Brit Mila on Shabbos that you're riding an elevator for. But otherwise, it wouldn't be relevant. According to position two, it is relevant for all mitzvot, all commandments, all positive values, you know, you can do on Shabbos. But the issue at hand here, what the question becomes in position two and three, the question becomes, what avera, what prohibition was being violated in this scenario, right? The situation the Gemara describes is one in which a non-Jew is bringing water from one house to another through a public thoroughfare. And so in theory, they are violating the prohibition of carrying on Shabbat, Hotsam, Rishut, Lirishut, one of the 39 Melachot. The question the Rishonim deal with is the scenario the Gemara is describing a rabbinic prohibition or a biblical prohibition? What type of public thoroughfare are we talking about? Because there is a very specific definition of a Rishut HaRabim Doraita, of a public thoroughfare that is prohibited to carry in from a Torah level. And so the discussion is that what we're dealing with? Are we dealing with a Torah level prohibition of carrying? Or was this what's called a Carmelite, some type of, you know, semi-public thoroughfare? It's not really, it's not like Times Square. It's not, you know, really public in the same way. And therefore, it'd be permitted on a biblical level. It's prohibited on a rabbinic level. But the prohibition that's being done here is a rabbinic prohibition. And so, in effect, then you have two positions. One position holds that this case is a case of a biblical prohibition, where something biblically prohibited is happening. You are carrying through a public thoroughfare, and therefore you can extrapolate from this Gemara that any time you have even a biblical prohibition, a lo tase, a melacha being done, it is permitted if a non-Jew does it, letzorech mitzvah. A shvut letzorech mitzvah, a non-Jew doing work for you for the purpose of a mitzvah, in the case of Brit Mila or some other mitzvah positive value on Shabbos, it would be permitted. That is position two. Position three says, no, what is this case? This case is not a case of biblical prohibition being violated here. It is a rabbinic prohibition being violated here. And so the only permission that we can extrapolate from this Gemara is that if we're dealing with a rabbinic prohibition and you ask a non-Jew to do that rabbinic prohibition, then it would be permitted b'makom mitzvah. Right? In general, a non-Jew cannot do for you even a rabbinic prohibition. You cannot ask a non-Jew to do something that's only violated on a rabbinic level. For instance, writing with my non-dominant hand, with my left hand, for most people, is only a rabbinic prohibition. I can't ask a non-Jew to write with his left hand. That would be prohibited, even though it's only rabbinic. Nonetheless, if it's b'makom mitzvah, if it's a situation of a mitzvah, so then I would be allowed to ask the non-Jew. In other words, the way that it's in code, the way we talk about this, is it's a shvut, the shvut b'makom mitzvah is mutter, meaning a shvut, the shvut, a rabbinic prohibition on a rabbinic prohibition. A non-Jew doing work for you is always rabbinically prohibited. So rabbinic prohibition of the non-Jew doing work for you to violate another rabbinic prohibition, a shvut, the shvut, shvut is affecting the rabbinic prohibition, shvut de shvut, in the situation in which you're doing it with mako mitzvah for the purpose of fulfilling a mitzvah, it is going to be permitted. So we have, in effect, these three views, and I'll summarize them by reading the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says as follows, source number four, davar she'enu melacha v'enu asur lasot b'shabbat el mishum shvut. If you're dealing with a prohibition which is only a rabbinic prohibition, like writing with your left hand, so in that scenario, mutar l'Yisrael lomar l'enu Yehudi la'asoto b'Shabbat, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do the melacha for you on Shabbos, it's rabbinic prohibition. In a scenario, v'hu she'esham miksat choli, o she'esarek l'davar tzorech harbin, o mipnei mitzvah. In a scenario in which there is some type of sickness involved, someone is sick in this scenario, or it's some type of great need, or in a situation of a mitzvah. Ketzad, for instance, gives an example. Omer Yisrael Einu Yehudi b'Shabbat la'lot b'ilan la'vi shofar l'kot ki mitzvah. You can ask a non-Jew to go up a tree. I never understood like why this would ever happen in practice. But Mishnah talks about the following scenario: if you have your shofar or your lulav stuck in a tree, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to bring the shofar for you because it's only a rabbinic prohibition of climbing a tree. You're allowed to ask them to go up the tree to get the shofar. Going up the tree is a derabanan. Asking the nadir is a derabanan, so it's a shvut dishvut. And it's permitted b'makom mitzvah because I need to blow the shofar for the sake of the mitzvah of tkiyat shofar. Likewise, a few other cases. In all of those situations, it would be permitted in our rabbinic prohibition if you're asking a non-Jew for the purpose of a mitzvah. That's position one. Position two, the Shulchan Aruch quotes, v'yesh osrim, some prohibit, even in that scenario, even if it's a shvut deshvut b'makom mitzvah, a rabbinic prohibition going to be violated by a non-Jew is still going to be prohibited, even b'makom mitzvah. That's kind of position one I quoted earlier, that the whole sugya that I quoted in source number three in Erevin, that whole discussion is only about Brit Milah, about circumcision. It doesn't relate to other mitzvot, in which case there's never any leniencies for our purposes about asking non-Jews to work for you. That's position two. Position three, quoted in the Ramah, Haggah, Lekaman, Siman Tufkav Pevav, Pasak Lehatir, V'yesh Makilin, Afilu B'mlacha D'oraita. There are some who permit, even in a situation of Malacha D'oraita, even if you're asking the non-Jew to do a Torah prohibition, it is going to be permitted according to some. The Ramah overall and somewhere else, I quote it here, the Ramah somewhere else, he does mention this, that there used to be a custom with regard to lighting, asking non-Jews to light lights for you on Shabbos for meals, but he really doesn't like the custom. And for the most part, of these three options, right, to summarize again, three options, three positions. Position one, everything is prohibited. There's no leniencies when it comes to elevators or anything, other mitzvot besides circumcision. Position two, it is permitted in a situation of double derabanan, of a two rabbinic prohibitions only, rabbinic prohibition one asking a non-Jew, and a non-Jew is only doing a rabbinic prohibition, like writing with the left hand or something else rabbinic, then it'd be permitted. Position three, which is the least popular, the Ramah quotes it, that even if it's a Torah prohibition, meaning you're asking the non-Jew to write with his dominant hand, even in that scenario, it'd be permitted, b'makom mitzvah, for the purpose of doing in mitzvah. Those are the three positions. Any questions about the three positions? The light itself is an interesting question. If it was like a, I mean, you have to might depend on like what type of light we're talking about, and how you view electricity, in general, if it's a deraita or derabanan. But in theory, there is room to talk about it, even if it was a deraita. But here, I guess this gets to the point, which is that at the end of the day, the way we paskin, the way that the normative psak is agreed by most people, is that we accept position two, kind of the compromise middle position, which is that we're not going to allow ask a non-Jew, even for a mitzvah purpose, to do a doraita. That, in general, we're not going to allow. We're not going to allow you ask a non-Jew to, you know, do some type of actual malacha, like writing with the right hand or some other, you know, Torah-level prohibition. But we do allow you ask a non-Jew to do a rabbinic-level prohibition. That's typically how we do hold. And so in the scenario at hand, that's, for the most part, in the light, if you could somehow limit that all the prohibitions being involved are only rabbinic, then we would permit it in those scenarios, assuming there was a need or a mitzvah or some type of other tzorech, which qualified. Joe. Right. So the doorman would be exactly this scenario. The doorman is doing something prohibited for you. Doorman really is a great example of a mir la'akum. There's this prohibition for me to accept, for me to benefit from the work that a non-Jew does on my behalf. A doorman would be a great one example of it. Even if you don't ask the doorman to do it, they're still doing it on your behalf. And so this exactly is the question. It kind of brings up, I guess, this issue, which is, can you therefore rely on the doorman to, you know, open the elevator for you to press the button? Can you rely on a doorman? And so this kind of becomes the issue. And it relates exactly to this previous point we dealt with, the three positions in the Shulchan Aruch and how we paskin, which is as follows. If you think that the only malachot being involved in an elevator are rabbinic, then in theory, you could make the argument that even asking a doorman to press the buttons for you is going to be what you'd call a shvut de shvut b'makom mitzvah. It would be a rabbinic prohibition, right? Only if you assume all the elevator pressing the elevator or the buttons are only rabbinic, then all the doorman has done for you is a rabbinic prohibition. It is being done by a non-Jew, assuming that a doorman in this question is non-Jew, is not Jewish. And you're doing b'makom mitzvah, you're doing it for the purpose of a mitzvah. We'll talk about definition of mitzvah in a minute. So, in theory, you could argue that asking a doorman will be permitted based on this psak. The issue you'll have a few kind of issues that might come up, reasons you cannot make that argument. First is not everyone might agree that the issues of pressing the buttons and operating the elevator, are they only rabbinic, or are there actually Torah-level prohibitions involved? There's quite some debate. We discussed it briefly last week about, you know, what exactly prohibitions are being involved. For the most part, most people tend to think that there are only rabbinic-level prohibitions involved. At the end of the day, the circuits are only temporary. We mentioned last week that even modern elevators, which most buildings on the Upper West Side are not so modern, just as a heads up, but especially more modern elevators, newer ones, tend to work on what's called like solid-state electronics, where there's, you know, less circuits are being closed and actually changing. It's really not really closing a circuit, but there may be some circuits are being closed. So there is a big debate about the doors closing and the light turning on. Potentially, if the light turns on, it might be a deraita if it's an incandescent light. So there are potential issues involved. Most poskim think, at the end of the day, there really is no Torah-level prohibition, but not everyone agrees. So if you did think you'd be concerned about this, so just be clear. Yeah, somebody's asking. Yeah. So to be clear, then you might be concerned. Some people are concerned that there is a Torah-level prohibition. For most people, most poskim who do not think there's a Torah-level prohibition, then in theory, it's only a rabbinic-level prohibition, in which case asking a non-Jew would be permitted b'makom mitzvah. Right? You'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew, the doorman, to press the buttons for you in the case of a mitzvah. What is defined as a mitzvah? I'll take Micah hand for now, and I'll define it in a second. Yeah, Micah. Which one? In the Gemara or in the Shulchan Aruch? Yeah, so the courtyard, that's part of the debate, and there are different girsot in the Gemara itself. The translation follows one girsah. Yeah, but, yeah. Okay, so I'll talk about the Shinoi question in a second. I'm going to table that for now, but I'll definitely will address that Shinoi question of using a different hand. Although, yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. We'll talk about that. I'll table that for a second. We'll get back to that. In terms of the issue of the doorman being an employee who does this all week, right? Let's say you're at like a really courteous building and the doorman, you know, even have a doorman attendant, like an elevator attendant who does this all week. That's their job. I think back in the day, that used to be very popular. Now it's less common, but there's still some places where they have elevator attendants. And so, yes, it's true that what you're referring to in terms of like the week-long concept is if you have an employee who works for you all week, in some scenarios, right, you would be allowed to have the employee work for you even on Shabbos, potentially. It's a long to discuss because they're working for you all week long. But that's very different from actually benefiting from the work they do on Shabbos itself. Even if you have an employee who works, you know, all 7 days for you, you know, week long in a mutter way, and, you know, you solve the issues of potentially working for you on Shabbos, you're still not necessarily allowed to benefit from the work they actually do on Shabbos. You would still be prohibited. The fact that they work all week long would not be grounds to permit benefiting from the work of an Anjou on Shabbos. That would not be valid grounds. The only valid grounds would be based on what we're talking about now, that is what potentially be a shivut to shivut b'makom mitzvah, a rabbinic prohibition in a situation of a mitzvah, what I just quoted in you know, source 4 in Shulchan Aruch, that would be grounds permitted, but the fact that Anjou works all week, that would not be sufficient grounds to permit benefiting. I hope that answers the question. It doesn't matter. It wouldn't matter. Even if, it'd be hard to argue. It's like, I mean, like if a non-Jew does something which is like completely mitasek, like there's like no forethought at all, it was like completely accidental, that'd be a big different. Maybe there you could talk about grounds. But you mean even if in this scenario, the doorman might not be like actively thinking like, oh, I want to do this work for someone, but they're not spacing out. They're not, you know, they're not doing this accidentally. That's their job. That's what they do all the time. So, well, the person isn't programmed. Person is a person. You know, halakha doesn't treat people like automatic, you know, beings. You know, we treat people as people. I understand your question. If anything, the question is often asked in the reverse. Shouldn't we be machmir based on non-Jews to prohibit automation? Which is sometimes the way that's asked. But we really don't assume that, we really do differentiate between, you know, the work of people who are not automated, who are, you know, sentient beings, versus automatic machinery. You know, that we really make that differentiation, even, especially in this context of, you know, non-Jews work. Yeah, someone else have a question? Yes, I mean, as I've said, there are scenarios in which there are exceptions to the prohibition of Amir La'akum. One of which we're talking about right now, about Shivut Deshuv Makom Mitzvah, a scenario of it being a double Darbanon, the employees doing work, our rabbinic prohibition, and there's a certain need for it. And I'm happy to give a whole shiur on, like, use of non-Jews, and, you know, a lot of us have, like, attendants and cleaners in the house who work on Shabbos, and there are certainly a lot of scenarios in which there's permissions, those are the exceptions. The rule is that you're not allowed to have a benefit from the work of a non-Jew on Shabbos, even if, and it's probably especially if the non-Jewish is a Jew in this scenario is a worker. The fact that he's a worker, in fact, makes it worse, doesn't make it better. So there's a lot to talk about. I'm gonna table it for now. I know this is a really fascinating topic. It's really important. I'm happy to talk about it after this year because I just want to keep it up. And there's a lot more to cover about elevators. We could have a whole other topic on like custodial staff and non-Jewish workers. Absolutely, it's a very important. And I'm definitely not gonna tell you right now that you know custodial staff is not allowed to work on Shabbos because there's certainly grounds to permit it, but there are all exceptions. As a general rule, it would be prohibited. So in our scenario here, let's kind of get back to the root of it. In our scenario here, assuming you thought, and there's some debate about this, but most people think that there's only a rabbinic prohibition to actually operate the elevator, then assuming it's only rabbinic prohibition involved, then you would be allowed to ask a non-Jewish doorman or to have a non-Jewish doorman press the button for you and bring you to the right floor on Shabbos, if you're doing so b'makom mitzvah, for the purpose of a mitzvah. Now, what is a mitzvah? What qualifies as a mitzvah? It can't just be anything. It has to be b'makom mitzvah. So there's some debate about what qualifies as a mitzvah, but the shorthand of it, if I really just say it on one hand, is that 95%+ of things you're doing on Shabbos, for the most part, probably constitutes and arguably constitutes a mitzvah for this purpose. There's some debate, but most people think that, you know, if you're going to shul, you're coming back from shul, if you're going for a meal, any meal as a kavod Shabbos, an issue of oneg Shabbos, if it's about enjoying Shabbos, if you're going for any mitzvah purpose, you know, of like going to a shir, or going to learn Torah, if you're going to, you know, bikur cholim, even arguably if you're going to, you know, hang out with your friends in the park, arguably that's part of kavod Shabbos, that's part of, you know, oneg Shabbos, of, you know, socializing, There's a lot of discussion about it, but for the most part, I'd say just like thinking about it, 95% of the reasons you'd ever leave your apartment on Shabbos or come back to your apartment on Shabbos are really going to be permitted as a mitzvah. It can qualify as a mitzvah, and it's going to be permitted in this scenario. And so, in theory, assuming you argue that there's no other elevator issues, which we talked about at the beginning, there's no like issue of going to an automatic elevator, and you assume that the prohibition involved in pressing the buttons are only rabbinic, then you'd be allowed to have the doorman press the button for you and use that on Shabbos. That's kind of the main takeaway. But there is one caveat that's worth mentioning, or there's a few caveats, but one in particular I want to mention first, which is the following. What happens if you intend to do this regularly, right? There's a scenario in which, I get asked out for Shabbos, I'm invited as a guest somewhere, and I find out that they live, on the 20th floor on Shabbos itself, right? Last minute, there's nothing for me to do. I have no other alternatives here. That's kind of one scenario, in which case, I'd be allowed to use this heter, this permission of Shavut Teshuva Makom Mitzvah. However, what happens if you're setting up the system to begin like this, right? You're buying an apartment or you're renting an apartment on the Upper West Side, knowing that you are going to rent an apartment on the 30th floor and or 15th floor, and you're going to need to regularly rely on this kula, on this leniency. Are you allowed to milechatchila from the initial creation of the situation already before Shabbos? Are you allowed to create this situation knowing you're going to have to rely on this leniency, right? Is that permissible? And so some people think, yes, there's no difference. You should be allowed to rely on this permission regularly. Many, though, do not. In fact, one of the main controversies about using doorman for Shabbos relies on this particular question of the fact that you are knowingly entering a situation where you're going to have to rely on this leniency. And it's often quoted based on this Shart Zion, and the Shart Zion, this Mishnah Berurah's footnotes to his work, and source 6 mentions that it's only permitted in a case, kishein lo etz acheret, when you have no alternative, aval bazeh halo yachol l'takin davar merav Shabbat. But here in this scenario, you're able to create an alternative before Shabbos, right? You could have moved to a lower floor, in which case you should not have relied on this leniency. In effect, the argument goes that we're allowing you to use a leniency, in a one-time scenario, but we want to avoid a regular use of this leniency. And there's a model for this type of thinking to say that it's one thing to allow Shabbos exceptions in certain scenarios, but not regularly. The story is told that the Chazon Ish was asked, for instance, about Elal or whoever, probably Elal, running flights on Shabbos to bring in Ethiopians, Jews who are escaping from Ethiopia into Israel. I think it was, I don't know what decade it was, but sometime in the 1900s, I think in the 60s or 70s, bringing Ethiopian Jews. And so he was asked about allowing the flights to run on Shabbos. And so Chazon Ish said, yes, you're allowed to do so. It's Pikuach Nefesh. You're allowed for the sake of Pikuach Nefesh to do any Melach on Shabbos, and therefore allowed to bring the Ethiopian Jews on Shabbos. They then asked him the next week, right, can you do it again? And at that point, he said no. He said that even though you're allowed to permit Pikuach Nefesh, in a one-time scenario, you're not allowed to create this regular situation in which Shabbos is being violated on the regular. Right? That is a situation Chazon Ish felt was too far, and he did not permit them to run Elal flights to save the Ethiopian Jews every single Shabbos as well. And so the argument is then carried to our scenario as well, where the argument is said that it's one thing to rely on this permission, this leniency of using a doorman, b'makom mitzvah, shuv teshuv b'makom mitzvah, in a scenario in which there's no alternative, and this is what this situation happened the one time. But to build into a situation where this is going to happen every single time, it's going to be problematic. And so, in effect, ideally, according to this view, which is a pretty predominant view, especially the Rav Soloveitchik believes in this, a lot of the YU Shiva believe in this. If you believe in this view, then really you should try moving to a lower apartment, lower floor. Of course, if you're on the Upper West Side, you know that there's no real alternative. Is there really such a common alternative you can really find an apartment that's lower? Not necessarily. So it's going to be, a lot more difficult. It's not so easy to find this exception, but this is certainly something worth mentioning as kind of the exception to using this leniency or the hesitancy people have in using this leniency, especially on the regular. That's kind of what you're going to hear out there in terms of the elevator issue. I'd like to, before summarizing and talking about, practically what to do, I want to bring up a few other scenarios that come up, a few variations on these topics. Any other questions so far? Somebody asked about other non-Jewish work. I'll talk about the non-Jewish work at the end after this year. Any other questions? Great. So a few other scenarios that come up. One is, what if you're riding along with someone who has a real need? Like, let's say, for instance, you're walking along with you're going up the elevator with let's say you're in a party of a few people, and one of the party is an elderly man or woman with a wheelchair, and they definitely cannot go up the elevator, right? And you're only going up the th three floors. You're not going up that high, but they have to use the elevator. Can I go in the elevator with them, right? Even if I could walk, can I rely on this kula? So actually, in that scenario, it's actually much better than even the doorman situation, because the Shulchan Aruch paskens is in source five that any time that malacha is already being done for someone sick or for someone who has like a great need, then to go along with that malacha, as long as nothing additional is being done for you, it's going to be permitted. And so the elevator is already the button's already being pressed. Or the elevator is already going to be operating regardless of whether you are there or not, because of the sake of this elderly or infirm person who cannot walk up the stairs, someone who's handicapped. And therefore, for you to ride along with them would be fine in terms of the Amir La'akum issue, in terms of benefiting from non-Jewish work. Of course, to go back to the original point we always made before, if you think there's an inherent problem of ever going in an elevator, even an automatic elevator, then those issues will still exist here as well, even if you're riding along. Those will still be problems. But in terms of the benefiting from non-Jews, this is actually be better than the doorman situation if a doorman's already using the elevator for someone who's sick, who's handicapped, or any other scenario where they can't use the elevator, then for you to ride along would actually be even better than for the doorman to press the button for you alone. That's kind of, I guess, one offshoot situation. A second offshoot situation that comes up, it was brought up earlier, is what happens, and this happens, plenty of buildings, if you have no doorman, right? Let's say, for instance, there's no way for you to use a non-Jew in a scenario, like there's no way to ask someone to do it for you. There's nobody there present. So what do you do? So the following the question becomes as follows, right? This permission of shvut to shvut b'makom mitzvah, a rabbinic prohibition on rabbinic prohibition for the sake of a mitzvah. Does that leniency apply to all malachot, right? Even when a non-Jew is not involved, or is it specifically a leniency that only applies for non-Jews? In other words, what if I would commit a double derabana, right? I decide I am going to write with my left hand using temporary ink, right? So in that case, that would be a double derabana, a left hand, that'd be non-dominant hand writing. On a temporary ink that's also a derabanan, only rabbinically prohibited to write with something that doesn't last, would that be permitted if it was for the purpose of a mitzvah? And so there's a lot of debate about that scenario, and I'll tell you why this is relevant in a minute. There's a lot of debate. Suffice it to say, we're not going to read the sources inside, that the Prima Gadim, one of the main commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, he prohibits that. He thinks that this permission only applies in scenarios in which a non-Jew is doing work, while others permit it, and I quoted a source number 8, you can read it yourself later on. The Chazon Ish did permit it, and others permitted it. Even other types of malachot derabanan, if you're doing it yourself, it would still be permitted. Which, in effect, why this is all relevant? Because it comes down in the following scenario. Let's say I do myself a double derabanan mekom mitzvah. I live in a building, no doorman, and I need to get up the stairs. It's just too hard. I can't take the elevator, whatever it is. Can't take the stairs. I want to use the elevator. Can I use a double derabanan? Can I press the button, which would only be, according to most people, a rabbinic prohibition? Can I do it in another rabbinically prohibited way? Can I do it in what's called, for instance, a shinoi? If I do a malacha, a general background, if I do a malacha b'shinoi, in a way which is abnormal to do the malacha, then it is only in general rabbinically prohibited. So, for instance, Typically, it's prohibited to write, you know, with my dominant hand. Let's say I decide to write with my toes by using my feet. I'm a very talented, you know, foot writer and able to write with my toes. So in that scenario, it'd only be rabbinically prohibited because it is ishinui, because it is you're doing the malacha in a different and abnormal manner. And so in that scenario, it's only rabbinic. Let's say, for instance, I press the elevator button in a abnormal way. I think someone mentioned about using your left hand. I don't think the left hand versus right hand would be abnormal enough. People use elevators, you know, buttons, whatever it is. But if I use my elbow in, let's say, non-COVID days, because in the COVID, you could argue that elevator using it, your elbow might have become almost normal during COVID. But non-COVID days, or, you know, use a very abnormal way, use your foot, use something an incredibly abnormal way of pressing the elevator button. Can you do it? You know, you're Jewish, you press the elevator button in this abnormal way. And I'm doing a rabbinic prohibition on rabbinic prohibition, b'makom mitzvah, which we saw that some people permit. Would that be an acceptable solution to your problem of how to use an elevator on Shabbos? And so the short answer is that probably for most poskim, the answer is yes, with the qualification that is probably, like we mentioned earlier, something that should only be redone on a temporary basis. It really does. There are a lot of assumptions you kind of have to make to permit that scenario. And so most poskim probably would not allow you to do it on the regular. You wouldn't be allowed to regularly use this, but if you're stuck in a certain scenario that comes up, you would perhaps be allowed to use this double derbana, this issue of you know, this hechitimse, this way, this solution of using a shinoid, pressing the elevator with your foot, with your elbow, that perhaps would be permitted in, you know, specific scenarios. And as a regular thing to do, that I would ask a posting, I would ask a posting if that were to come up. Because it's not something that most people would be so comfortable to do on the regular. The last issue that kind of that kind of brings up in this whole issue, that the last kind of thing that worth mentioning. Sorry that in advance, I'm gonna apologize right now that we're gonna go over time. I know usually I try keeping it to an hour, but I do feel like this topic is popular enough that it's worth mentioning and going through in detail. So the last issue, so I'm pausing in advance. If you do have to go, feel free to go. There is a recording and you can listen to the recording afterwards. It is posted on the LSS website. So the last issue I want to mention, and I'm really just going to mention this very briefly, is that all of this discussion until now about, you know, using a non-Jew, a doorman, whatever it is, all of that assumed we're talking about a non-Jewish person. As I mentioned earlier, if we're dealing with a Jew, it becomes very complicated. And on the West Side, in other places as well, but especially on the Upper West Side, it's very common. A non-Jew here, a non-religious Jew, it's pretty common. There are a lot of them, you know, who live around us. And so it becomes a very complicated question. The short answer is that it's honestly too complicated to give a short answer. I'm going to kind of table it. I would honestly say, in terms of practicality, if you live in a building with enough people in the building, I really recommend you wait. Assuming there's no doorman, I really recommend you wait for a non-Jew to come. If, you know, there's only a non-religious Jew, like it doesn't not people who come so often, or the doorman is non-religious Jew, I would probably just ask like a private personal question. It's just there are too many factors involved. I'm going to table that discussion, but it is worth noting. That if we're talking about a Jew, all of this kind of goes by the wayside. It becomes a very different question, a lot more complicated. Great. So that's kind of the main issues when it comes to elevator. I'm going to kind of skip something else. It's not really worth mentioning. So I'm going to kind of end and summarize here. So let me, I'm going to stop my share. Yeah. Right. So in terms of the non-Jewish Jewish question, I really want to table the non-Jewish discussion. It's really a lot more complicated in terms of if they are actually Jewish. In terms of, are they Jewish? I mean, you can probably assume based on, your general sense. I would say as a rule of thumb, you can probably tell a little bit if they're Jewish. You don't have to ask them. Don't have to be rude about it. If there's a reasonable chance that they're Jewish, that you should be more machmir or more cautious about using it. If there's like a, you know, if you're not sure, if you think there's like a decent chance they're probably not Jewish, or even if they say they're Jewish, but their maternal side of the family tree is not Jewish, then you're fine. You don't have to rely on it. I mean, obviously, it becomes more complicated. I'm very much aware that in practice, this is not so obvious, not so clear. But I would say the general guidelines, like, yeah, you don't have to ask. Don't have to be rude about it. It's better to ask in some ways, but it's, don't have to ask. If you don't think they're Jewish, you don't think they're Jewish. That's fine. You don't have to like, be to do like that. You don't have to do a full ancestry tree to find out. Great. So I want to kind of summarize. I know that we've talked a lot about things. Yeah. Oh, sorry. The first question. I forgot the first question. Yeah. Okay. So that type of scenario, according to those who hold that there is a problem of setting up using this leniency of the Shavuot Teshuvah Makom Mitzvah on a regular basis. So in that scenario, right, you moved in, not planning on using it. That first Shabbos, the first few Shabboses, where all of a sudden, you broke your leg or whatever it is, you can't walk up the stairs anymore. In that scenario, obviously, the first few weeks, according to those positions, you'd be fine. The question would be in terms of the long term, right? Would there be an obligation for you to move buildings, right? And so, really, it's worth mentioning this right now that a lot of this it becomes very complicated because when do you really are you really in a situation you can avoid it? So you're a one-time guest in Manhattan. Maybe you could take the stairs, but you can't really move to a different apartment. It's not so maybe it's better if you could find a different apartment that's on a lower floor, but in theory, like are you really obligated to move? It's not really something always that's in the realm of possibility. And so while people might not love, according to this position that prohibits using leniency on the regular, the question you have to ask, a very serious and honest question, is there actually a viable alternative? Right? Does a viable alternative exist? Because using the stairs on the regular is not going to be necessarily viable, and moving to a different apartment if you live on the west side, not necessarily viable, especially if you own the apartment. Even if you don't own the apartment, to find, a low floor apartment is very difficult. So I think it's, I think especially on the Upper West Side, it's going to be a lot more difficult to rely on that, position that it would be prohibited to use this kula, because there really are no alternatives. But let's bring it back, home, and let's talk about kind of like the way, kind of summarize all of these issues about elevators. Because in effect, we have the following. To begin with, all elevators, regardless of who's pressing the buttons and how they work, and even if no one presses the buttons, you have all of the potential issues we dealt with last week. The issues of the door sensors, which are always going to be true. You always have to avoid the door sensors. You're going to have the issues potentially of your weight causing electrical current needs to be raised to be able to move you up and down. You have the potential problems if you're going down that you might have an issue of your weight contributing to malacha. All of those issues are going to be issues regardless about, we'll talk, I'll mention in a minute. All of those issues are going to be issues regardless of who's pressing the buttons or how you're going down. For the most part, the way we kind of conclude is that for an automatic elevator, in terms of these issues, there's not really going to be an issue, especially going up. You really can rely on the kulas of that's technically the typical like talk is that you really could go up the elevator if it's an automatic elevator. All these issues are kind of side issues, but it's worth noting that there are the dissenters. If you know someone who's machmir not to use an elevator, it's for those reasons. They don't use an elevator, and especially I'd say that going down, while the heavy hitters for the most part permit going down an elevator, an automatic elevator like Shlomo Zalman and Orbach. Nonetheless, the opinion that thinks there's a prohibition to go down the elevator is a fairly significant opinion, in which case going down an elevator is a little bit more complicated. It may be permitted, Ikar HaDin, maybe fundamentally it is permitted, but it is more problematic, and it is one of those situations in which I would say that, if you can avoid it, better to avoid it, but obviously, I'll talk in a second about, you know, how practical that is living in a Manhattan apartment to avoid those types of issues. But that's in general in terms of the automatic elevator. The non-automatic elevator, we talked about, there are two scenarios. One scenario in which you're riding along with someone you don't know or someone who's not doing for you this favor. And assuming that there's no issue with the previous issue of the elevator as a whole, you don't think there's an issue of the elevator, and the person riding along with is not Jewish, you would be allowed to ride along with them. The second scenario we talked about was a doorman or a neighbor pushing a button for you, which we said would be permitted in theory by Mako Mitzvah, right? If it's a doubled or a button, if you assume the only issues of an elevator, of pressing an elevator, are rabbinic and not Torah level, which is some debate, but most people assume it's only rabbinic, then in theory you'd be allowed to press the button, have the non-Jew press the button for you, even to ask them to press the button for you. It doesn't make a difference at that point whether you're asking or not. Better you don't if you can avoid asking, but you could even ask. You'd even be able to ask and press the button for you. In this situation, we just talked about whether or not you can do so, you know, regularly or just, you know, in situations of, you know, extreme need. We just mentioned that. But in theory, you would be allowed to use the doorman. So in terms of the Manhattan question, here's kind of what I want to really end off with before I talk about the in terms of the practicality. Because at the end of the day, here's the question. If you don't live in Manhattan, you live in like the suburbs and you're coming for Shabbos once, you know, and you're going to stay somewhere the one time, if you're someone who is capable of walking up the stairs, then in theory, maybe you should walk up the stairs. I think, you know, in terms of Psak Halacha, there's enough room to say that there should be something potentially problematic that I suggest that, you know, if you could walk up, it's probably better. There is a lot of people who think it's permitted, so I wouldn't say you have to walk up the stairs. You certainly would be permitted not to, based on all the examples we gave earlier. But the one time, if you can make it up, you know, don't push yourself, don't strain yourself too much. But if you can make it up, better to make it up. Especially if you can make it down, better to walk down the stairs than not. If though you live on the regular in Manhattan and you really don't have an alternative, you cannot keep walking up and down. It's not really feasible, and for two reasons. First, it's not really feasible because at the end of the day, it's just too tiring. And more than just tiring, there's this real issue that at the end of the day, if you're not allowed to actually go take the elevator, let's say, for instance, I live on the 12th floor. I'm actually in college. One of my years, I live on the 13th floor. And I can tell you out of my own practice that I wasn't taking the elevator that year. I felt fit enough. I could walk up and down the stairs. I didn't feel like I had to rely on these. That was my personal position at the moment, but I'm not saying that what you should do, but that was my personal position. So I wasn't taking the elevator. And I can just tell you from experience that I would go to my apartment a lot less often on Shabbos. I'd be invited out for meals. It was my freshman year. Most of the meals were with seniors who had their own apartments. And I would often just not go back to my apartment on Shabbos. I would end up just sleeping, you know, in someone's couch. Because if I were going to my apartment, there was a very low chance I was going to leave it and go to Mincha and walk down the stairs, back up the stairs. It's just a lot of stairs. And that type of energy really refrains and affects your Shabbos mood. And I think if you live in a tall apartment building and you have no alternative, that's really, you know, the rent options to choose a low apartment building were very limited or very expensive, or there were other pitfalls that, you know, a lot more significant for whatever reason, the view is worse, whatever, you know, whatever it is, you can talk about the various factors involved in your decision. But at the end of the day, you have no real alternative. You chose this apartment. Now, if you're not going to use the elevator, it's going to have a very significant effect on your Shabbos, especially not just the one Shabbos, but your Shabbos overall, your whole Shabbos in terms of going to Minyan not just once, but going to Minyan week in and week out is going to be very much affected by it. And so I think the question becomes a very different question in that scenario. And not only is it a different question in that scenario of the regular going up, you know, using it on a weekly basis, but I want to make reference to something we discussed earlier in the series, which is the issue of Shvita, the issue of Shabbaton. There's a value on Shabbos of resting. There's a value on Shabbos, we talked earlier, we quoted the Ramban, about not being busy and not being, you know, doing work type activities and not, you know, that's perhaps why it's prohibited from taking the subway on Shabbos or from biking on Shabbos, you know, all sorts of activities where you're really actively moving around and moving your body, right? All those prohibited, all those activities are certainly disdained at the very least. We want really to have a restful Shabbos. And so I ask you the following question, right? Which is better? Is it better for me to rely on the doorman to press the button for floor 15, or for me to walk up the stairs huffing and puffing, and if it's hot outside, or I'll be sweating, I'll be schwitzing, and I'll come to the apartment, especially if I'm not in good shape, but even if I am in good shape, 15 flights is a lot of flights, and I do not have a restful Shabbos. In fact, I kind of just exercised right there, right? Is that really the spirit of Shabbos, right? Which is worse? Is it really worse to take the stairs? And not only that, is it really better to take the stairs? And not only that, but it's worth mentioning that oftentimes in stairwells, especially nowadays, you'll have automatically triggered lights. Right? There are a number of stairwells for which when you walk up the stairs, some type of sensor will notice you're there and lights will either turn on or turn a lot brighter. And I'm not saying upstock in terms of is it prohibited to walk up or down the stairs, but there are certain halachic issues to contend with. And so in terms of factoring in those potential halachic issues, plus the fact that you're walking, is it really so obvious that taking the elevator is a worse halachic option than walking up or down the stairs? Like, I'm not sure that it's going to be, I'm not sure that it's always worse to really take the elevator. Sometimes it may even be preferable than taking the stairs. Someone asked about driving. Driving would be worse because driving deraisa, and maybe talk about this in terms of that's the question of Shabbaton in general, in terms of how far do we take this ideal. But certainly walking to shul is something we don't consider to be problematic. But I think huffing and puffing, you know, up 15 flights of stairs, that's a really different level than just like walking to shul and driving to shul in that context. So I really think there is that potential discussion to be had that it's not always better to walk up the stairs. It may be better in certain situations. There's certainly a value to be talked about using the elevator. That being said, that's not giving you permission to use the elevator. It's just, you know, kind of the factors to think about. And as I said from the beginning, I am not giving psak here. If you want your personal psak, I give you like specific to your situation. Feel free to call me or call Robert Robinson. You know, we're both willing to, more than willing to help out in a particular situation. But these are all kind of the general guidelines, the issues that come up. And so if I were to summarize again, in terms of the hierarchy of what's best and what's worse, if you are in a situation where you have to take an elevator, the best situation might be, and we just talked about this now, for the most part, probably best if you can take the stairs, assuming you're healthy and able to take the stairs. That's with all the caveats I just mentioned, you know, a minute ago about stairs and the lights that might come on and the exercise and all of those. But in theory, taking the stairs is the best possible option. The next best option would be using an automatic elevator, a Shabbos elevator. Option number three would be to ride along with a non-Jew who's taking the elevator at the same time, and you would get off at the same floor they're getting off. Option four would be to ride along already with someone who's sick or elderly or needs to go up the stairs anyways, and you're relying on them. Option five would be using a doorman. And finally, the worst option, the less preferable option, would be to use your own shinoi, some form of a change in behavior to turn, you know, to press the button in the elevator with an elbow or with your foot. Right, that would be the worst option, but it is an option in a scenario in which you really have no alternatives. That's kind of the hierarchy of like, you know, better, best from worst. As I mentioned, right, these are all guidelines or opinions that, you know, span the gamut. And you know, who you particularly decide to follow will obviously reflect a lot of these decisions. Where do you live? You know, your personal health, all of those type of factors will come in. I want to end, and then I'm happy to take any other questions. I want to end, and I know I've ran late already, but I think it's worth mentioning this. I want to end by quoting a story that Rabbi Haskell Lookstein quoted in his reflection essay for Soloveitchik, or Joseph D. Soloveitchik, in an essay that Haskell Lookstein, living on the East Side, wrote about. He writes the following. And I think it's a worthwhile way to end this year and to really frame this issue as a whole. The Rav is source number 10. The Rav, Joseph B. Soloveitchik, he was tolerant with those with whom he did not agree. He had many personal minhagim and piskei halacha he firmly believed in, but he did not force upon his students. And one of those examples is this particular question of elevators. And Lipstein presents the following situation. He says as follows. 35 years ago, I had heard the Rav explain in his shiur that the lenient psak of the Ramah applies to elevators on the Shabbos, namely that the prohibition of using an elevator is a rabbinic one, above, and the Rav's psak was that if you live above the fifth floor, you're going above the fifth floor. That is a situation that he considered e'afshar ba'ofen acher. It's unreasonable to do it by climbing the stairs. And therefore, if you're going up the elevator for the purpose of performing one of the mitzvot of Shabbos, eating, sleeping, studying, visiting a sick, etc., then you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to operate the elevator, even ab initio, you'd be allowed to do so regardless of any other scenarios. That's kind of the Rav's psak that he had given in this year. About 10 years ago, I guess 25 years later, Rabbi Huskel relates that he came to the Rav to ask whether he still held the view with regard to modern self-operating elevators. The Rav responded, he looked at me quizzically and said, Huskel, what did your father do? I answered that my father asked Anandji to push the button so that he could go to the 11th floor. He responded to me with astonishment, so why would you be more religious than your father? I, of course, protested that I was not trying to do that at all, but that I merely wanted to know whether his view had remained the same after 35 years, and the Rav assured me that the talk in the elevator did not change, but the lesson was one which I cannot forget. And what is this lesson that Haskell Luxinger refers to here? What he's referring to is this idea that at the end of the day, you have a certain familial custom, this is what your family does, and perhaps you can make an extension to this what your community does. And while, you know, it's all good and well to be machmir in certain situations, if you can personally, you know, walk up the stairs, great. If you can't walk up, you know, even if you personally be machmir, it's worth being aware of the traditions, the minhag that your family has. And if your family as a whole, you know, always uses the elevator, it doesn't mean you can't follow your own psak and be machmir, but it is worth noting the value that halacha poses upon minhagim, upon family customs, and that in this particular scenario, Rabbi Luxin was being told that if his father, who was himself a rabbi, was being told, was using this permission of using the elevator, then Rabbi Haskell Luxin should as well follow his father's psak and use the elevator too. And so I think in the context of, you know, a city where we really live with a lot of people, we end up using these leniencies because that's kind of the nature of the situation. I think we live in a scenario in which there's a lot more room to rely on these leniencies and there's less of a need, I wouldn't say it's prohibited to do so, but there's less of a halachic need to differentiate yourself and be overly machmir when this really has become the communal custom, it's become your family custom to rely on these leniencies because there really is less of an alternative here in Manhattan, here on the Upper West Side, to not use an elevator. Doesn't mean that you shouldn't use an elevator, you shouldn't use the stairs, you can, but it does mean that the situation is always nuanced as always and that it's worth appreciating all the various factors. All right, that's my take. Any questions so far? I know there are a lot of questions about Amir al-Aqib in general. I'm happy I have to take them now, or we can discuss them at a different time. Or you can ask first, I guess, elevator-related questions too.